Just like Double Mint Gum, we're now twice as nice with the premiere edition of the weekday No Agenda. It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning. Coming to you from Gitmo Nation, East and Southwest London, I'm Adam Curry.
And I'm John C. Dvorak here in Silicon Valley North, also known as Gitmo Nation, period.
Ah, what do you mean? I don't get my piece of Gitmo anymore?
You know, you get to be Gitmo Nation whatever, East, and there's Gitmo Nation West should be China.
It's all one big Gitmo Nation, man.
So I noticed that Rush Limbaugh now has a Gitmo Nation thing going on.
Oh, you're kidding me. He calls it Gitmo Nation, literally?
No, it's something else, but it's similar.
Oh, man.
He's using Gitmo. So we have to come up with another T-shirt to well, he'll sell more than we will, but I'll have to come up with something for Saturday.
Well, you say that now, but you never know. Now that we're doing two shows a week...
Yeah, twice as many opportunities.
God. Big, heavy sigh.
This was your idea. So yeah. I'm reading, by the way. So I get up this morning, and I get some email from a friend who sends me the, and I'm going to blog it so people out there you can pick this up later this afternoon because it's actually posted on the New York Post. The entire list, 300 pages of everybody scammed by Madoff.
Oh, man. Excellent.
It's like, can you find some of your friends? I couldn't find anybody, but I did a couple. You can search because it's a PDF file. And so I found a lot of, like, 12 people in Berkeley, that got nailed.
Well, I saw a partial list, and it had didn't have Ben Affleck on it and a couple of Hollywood movie stars.
I haven't found those yet. I just got it. I did find the venture capitalist Arthur Rock.
Oh, and we know Arthur from where?
He was one of the early investors in Apple. But the funny thing is that I think that this thing, I made a copy of it, obviously, because I think this is going to be pulled down because there's so many people on this list that are going to be embarrassed.
No one wants to look like a douche, yeah.
So, and they're all, a lot of lawyers. I think they're going to sue to get this thing taken up. But it's too late. It's going to be on the internet. If anybody out there can get a copy of it, save it.
Yeah, save
and
it.
And then... it'll be around forever.
Have you been following the testimony of the whistleblower about the Madoff case?
Oh, I watched it yesterday. The guy was just blasting.
Isn't it beautiful? I mean, he's almost like a truther. He's up there. He's like, I'm coming with another mini Madoff tomorrow who's been scamming for $1 billion. He just keeps on going. And the SEC is inadequate and under-equipped and under-motivated.
And dumb.
And he didn't quite say that. But man, oh, man.
And then did you see the SEC? They came out and testified, and there were just a bunch of bureaucratic weenies led by some woman named Linda Thompson.
Yeah, and she's like, unfortunately, because the case is under investigation, I can't answer that question.
She is the worst.
It's just unbelievable. But I love I forget who it was. I really should pay attention to these senators and congressmen. And of course, it's a guy from a smaller state. That's why no one knows him. He says, I don't think the scam is Bernie Madoff. I think the scam is you. Pointing right at the SEC. I'm like, yeah, baby.
Right. The only thing I didn't get to see is the commentary. Maybe it happened. I didn't get to see the whole thing. Would be something like, and so why does Martha Stewart go to jail?
It's for the same reason that when President Obama said, yeah, I smoked weed and I smoked a lot of it, or I inhaled a lot, I think was his quote. It's like, okay, we just kind of let that go. And then poor Michael Phelps, I mean, granted, bong pictures never look good. They just make you look incredibly dumb. And, now this guy's like, yeah, losing all his sponsorship and, he's ashamed and, you're no longer a role model. It's like, dude. But again, I will state that bong pictures just don't look good. It just has a very negative thing to it.
Yeah, also, it looks like, it's not, because of the size and all, it's not a crack pipe, but it has that image.
It's not even close to a crack pipe. Oh, man, poor guy. But, marijuana is not on the list of illegal substances for many sporting leagues and events.
And the way I see it, if the guy's half stoned and can still swim like that, holy crap.
Give him 2 gold medals.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Like, way to go, my buddy.
Hey, dude. Did the gun go off yet?
No. Professional smokers are not like that, John. You should know better.
Oh, man, I think so.
So I was watching. There was something on, I think it was another one of these PBS things where they're talking about all these people, you know, like Ireland. Everyone's like closing out all their companies and everybody's moving to Poland. You've been noticing this. Is there any action in the EU news about this?
Well,
see, the movement's called delocalization.
Yeah, well, not specifically about Ireland, but all of the EU right now is the wheels are coming off this thing as we speak. I mean, it's everyone's messed up because of this, you know, protectionism, which is the huge thing everyone's talking about here, and jobs moving from left to right. I did not know that the Irish are moving to Poland, which seems like a very surprising move indeed, seeing as most of Europe is filled with Poles who come over here to work for a couple of months and go back home.
Yeah, well, apparently a lot of them are going back home in droves. Anyway, which is a weird sentence. Anyway, but it was about Irish mainly, because then they've opened up a slew of Irish pubs in various cities. And
In
Poland. No, not Warsaw. Łódź.
Łódź. Would you blow me? Would you blow me?
The third, maybe. Not me, but I think that may be going on around Łódź. Anyway, it's the third biggest city in Poland, and it looks to me to be one of those, you know, let's move everything into this place and give them all the tax breaks we can and do this, that, and the other thing. And it's probably worth checking out.
Well, Ireland economically is in deep, deep kimche. They're really in trouble. A number of European countries are now getting into massive problems, and their country debt is being downgraded.
I get the biggest kick out of the whole situation.
We're downgrading
first
your
they
country.
Set up this idiotic EU, and then, you know, because now you're I don't understand why you would say something like that. This crazy EU with all these countries that never really got along before. That's why they're all their own countries, but let's ignore that. And then you bring in these Eastern European countries that are hungry and they're more aggressive, and many of them are like glad to, you know, they're super capitalist because they were under communist rule for so long. They've gone crazy.
Like wildfire with, you know, huge expensive stores, and everyone was borrowing money like crazy because you could do it now.
Just like the Americans.
Oh, yeah.
And anyway, like in Poland, for example, so they go crazy. They're just going nuts. And the EU, because of the way it's structured, they're subsidizing this.
It's such a shambles, man.
It's like, let's ruin Ireland and subsidize Poland. And now Poland's got the only viable economy, or one of the few, and these other Eastern European countries. It just cracks me up. What incompetent boneheads are running this operation?
Well, I'll tell you. I've got some audio for you today. This is what's been driving the media nuts here in the UK for the past 2 days. This is Gordon Brown, who made another one of his Freudian slips. You're going to hear him say that we're in a depression instead of a recession, and that just drove everyone crazy. Have a listen.
In large numbers of country, we face a downward spiral.
I'll give you a little bit of extra audio for context.
Anybody, because foreign banks have left. It's all the more reason why, first of all, we should sign the Doha Agreement, and that will feature on the G20 agenda. Secondly, we should make sure that every country is analysed for what it is doing by the World Trade Organization to prevent protectionism. And it also is absolutely clear that we should agree as a world on a monetary and fiscal stimulus that will take the world out of depression.
There it is.
Oh, yeah.
So everyone's like, now you have to publicly say you meant recession and not depression. Such a tool.
If he had any balls, he'd say, yeah, no, I meant depression, jerk-offs.
Just for laughs, should we listen to that other gaffe he made about saving the world?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I like that one.
The first point of recapitalization was to save banks that would otherwise have collapsed. And we not only saved the world, saved the banks.
Yeah!
But listen to, I love their parliament. Listen to how everyone's going nuts.
We not only saved the banks.
And now he's trying to turn around. Save the world's banks, I meant. Look, they're going crazy. So where does that come from, John? These are, you call them Freudian slips, but of course they have nothing to do with sex, I don't think. But when someone makes, does these Freudian slips,
gaffes,
yeah, but it's clearly a slip because you know the guy didn't really mean to say save the world. You know that he just messed up. But it doesn't that mean that is on his mind and he is thinking that way?
I don't know. You'd have to talk to a psychiatrist or psychologist about that. But I mean,
wait a minute. That's a job, a vocation you have not yet held?
I mean, you have to form the words save the world. You have you have to have structured that sentence somewhere along the line, so you could blurt it out like that. Mm-hmm. So he's probably thinking that, or I mean, the guy's an idiot.
Well, that's more than general consensus.
And anyway, you get the Doha thing thrown in.
What is that? What is the Doha Agreement? That sounds
isn't that the Lisbon Treaty reformulated? Oh no, Doha is the trade agreement. That's the trade thing.
There you go.
Yeah, it's that crazy trade agreements where it's essentially opening up more markets. It's just some way to scam the public. I don't know. Anyway, enough of those idiots.
Really? I got to say something about our president this morning. I'm trying to
Obama?
Find. Yeah, that one. I'm trying to find. Wow, I sounded very Republican there.
Which one? Which one of the ones?
President Obama, our current president.
The real one?
Or the one that took the other oath. I don't know. I think it's the TV Obama. That's the one.
Okay.
Because this morning.
That's a different guy than the president.
Yes, I understand. I concur with your theory. On CNBC this morning, live, and I can't, it wasn't on C-SPAN because I was switching around trying to find the feed because they did interrupt it at a certain point. They had, and this was the funny part, they had Obama speaking at a, quote, private breakfast. It even had the caption on screen, President Obama speaking at private breakfast, which is broadcast live.
How private can it be?
I know, broadcast live on CNBC. And he goes in this whole thing about FDR and how he led these prayer sessions and, during the tough times, he would go to these breakfasts and he would pray with it. I mean, to me, and of course CNBC cut it off too early, it seemed like the president was literally saying, please, let's pray because we're so screwed. Pray. That's all we can do. It just really freaked me out. I have no idea where I can find this video, but it was this whole wind up and I'm like, oh my God, he's going to ask us all to pray.
You know, the thing is about Obama and these references to Roosevelt, during the campaign, didn't he, or during the debates perhaps, didn't he make a big fuss over the fact that we shouldn't be looking backward, we should be looking forward, because Bush had made some reference of some sort?
Uh-huh.
Well, this is that all he's been doing since is looking backward.
Yeah, I agree.
Roosevelt, nobody, I mean, how many people that listen to this podcast or even around, were alive during Roosevelt's administration? I mean, he died in 1944, I believe. So, I mean, it was like, you know, the entire baby boom generation was born after he was dead.
How many terms did he serve? Did he serve two terms?
Four.
He served four terms?
Yeah, he served four terms, and he's the reason that two things had happened because of him, which one of them is quite ironic. Because he served four terms, they passed. That's when the constitutional amendment came into place, saying you can't be president more than twice.
I was going to say, because I thought it was illegal. Okay.
It was illegal after
him. After him. Uh-huh.
Because they said, look, we're not going to go through this again. And the public, if that constitutional amendment wasn't passed, let's face it, Clinton would still be president.
It's interesting the founding fathers didn't put any term limits in there.
Well, they assumed because these guys were going to run once or twice because it was kind of a job where you didn't have, it was just a job and, you didn't want to really.
They didn't take into account the military industrial complex and the revolving door of lobbyists and all the money that actually makes this new system work.
Right.
Okay.
They didn't. And so that's
well, in fact, they warned against it, in fact.
Yes, they did. And so so this possibility existed where you'd have somebody just damn near become a king. Now, if it was Clinton, I mean, he'd still be in office, which means he'd been in office and running for his fifth term. He'd be the Obama. He'd be in for five terms and maybe six because he's still young enough to run two or three more times. You know, luckily Roosevelt was old, and he had polio and he wasn't that healthy. But he would have been in there forever, the way it was going. So anyway, so that's one thing that happened. So they added the constitutional amendment.
Right.
The second thing they did was sometime after, I think it was after the Truman administration, the Republicans pushed into play the fairness doctrine.
Ah, this was where you have to provide equal airtime, which I was taught in college when I studied communications. That was still in place. Yeah,
right. It was until 1987, the Fairness Doctrine was in place. And the Fairness Doctrine was pushed by the Republicans because the Democrats were abusing the privilege.
They owned the media?
No, they've always had the liberal. I mean, the amount of liberal perspective, amount of liberal perspective within the media has always been very high, and it remains so.
How were they using it unfairly?
And they were using it unfairly. How? Well, they were just. Well, I guess they were having these, you know, the same, what was like going on, you know, with these certain kinds of broadcasters or I guess the president, I think it had a lot to do with the president, you know, this fireside chat that Roosevelt did,
right,
he initiated
right,
that. So he's
right.
on all the time on the radio, blah, 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 blah. And nobody could say anything
people
against
of America,
him.
Let us pray.
And so, you know, he didn't have any balance at all and there was no way of getting any. So, the Fairness Doctrine came in, so now when the president gave his weekly address on the radio, you know, a Republican could come out and say, hey, this guy's full of crap, or the other way around. Anyway, so the Fairness Doctrine was initiated, and it balanced things out, and then it became part of broadcasting lore, where you'd have to have one guy, then the other, and then you'd have to have
equal time.
And Reagan is the one who said, this is a crock. I mean, the times have changed. Let's just drop this thing. And then what happened then
was he also deregulated all television and radio so that it could all kind of roll up. Didn't he do this first deregulation?
I'm not sure who did the first deregulation of television and radio. Maybe. But whatever the case was, the Fairness Doctrine was dropped. And then the rise of right-wing talk radio, which is really a minor player, came into vogue. As, you know, Rush Limbaugh is the one who discovered it. I mean, he figured it out first. Let's put it that way. And if to the tune of $400 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Democrats are all bent out of shape because, you know, he's just a critic and they don't want any critics. And so they want to reinstitute the Fairness Doctrine, not realizing that they're the ones who had benefited from this wide open structure more than anyone. And in fact, the fact of the matter is that Limbaugh, he didn't make Obama lose the election. He's just a guy who's carping all the time. These guys don't want anybody complaining. He didn't. There was no. The election didn't go to McCain because of right wing talk radio. Hey, notice this. McCain didn't even win.
Yeah.
So right wing talk radio is an ancillary function of, you know, of the entertainment business. And the fact is, I think it just bugs them that you have people like Michael Savage and people like Rush Limbaugh, you know, calling out people like Nancy Pelosi, and she's the one that wants to get rid of it, go reinstitute the Fairness Doctrine, because she's the target. Oh, she's a, you know.
I put her on Mevio Today that airs tomorrow with her her press conference where she says 500 million Americans will lose jobs. It's a gaffe, but I just couldn't resist.
That one in the fisting gag.
Well, I said it's no wonder they can't figure out their taxes. Can't even count the number of people in the country.
500 million people. I missed that one. I got to blog it.
Yeah. I'll send you the clip. But but just on that topic, dude, it's like it's been four nominations in this administration have evaded taxes.
Yeah.
Or evaded may be a strong word, but they didn't complete.
They didn't pay.
Did you catch the thing where, even though he's now been affirmed, Timothy Geithner? Now, this is the guy who was also partly responsible for $350 billion of TARP money that has already been handed out to his buddies and Paulson's pals. Paulson's pals. In the morning. And he was, during his testimony, you know, they're drilling into this tax thing, and I said, well, you know, so how did you prepare your taxes? And he says, with TurboTax. So that's probably what he compiled the TARP money with, too. Oh, I just put it in my TurboTax here, and oh, look at that. A lot of money goes to my friends for bonuses, which is a total distraction, by the way. Total distraction. I think they're playing it up, and the public, of course, loves it. Yeah, you know, cuz there's nothing more closer to home than tax issues. But meanwhile, you know, there's all kinds of crap coming down, John. And the president going around saying, "I'm sorry. I screwed up." What's up with that?
I don't know. He did that during the campaign too. When some, he likes to say that. It's just his style. You know, I mean, at least he's like, you know, the difference between I screwed up and him taking it, taking the blame, as opposed to the way Bush would have handled. I thought about this. Bush would have probably pointed the finger at somebody and then fired him, and you know, or something like that. But he wouldn't have been the, you know, the.
Well, there was no one to fire. Daschle took himself off the list. It was not a firing situation.
Yeah, I think the Democrats have always had, ever since Harry Truman, a buck stops here type of approach to taking the blame for whatever happens. In other words, the president, you know, he just says, "I'm my fault," when it probably wasn't. Because let's face it, he's not.
Of course, it wasn't. That's what. Yeah. Now you hit the nail on the head. That's what bothers me about it. It's not his fault. It's just not.
Yeah, I know, but it's his fault that he picked somebody who made the mistake. So it is his fault. And maybe when he's saying I screwed up, he's not talking about the actual thing that we see as the screw up, but somebody that he let make a decision. That's the screw up. He didn't elucidate it.
Do you think that people find him more endearing? Do you think it worked if that indeed was the plan?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah. It doesn't bother me.
I mean, I'm glad that we have two President Obamas, as you claim, because the number one guy is pretty damn busy with all this TV appearances. Every morning he's doing a gig. When does he have time to meet and discuss with people? He's always on TV.
Yeah, and he's doing private breakfasts.
Yeah. Publicly.
I mean, I haven't got barely enough time to eat breakfast, let alone have a private huge breakfast where I have to give a speech.
Yeah. You know, I'm just saying. It's good that we got two of them. We need them. As long as there's only one Rahm Emanuel, then I'm okay. Then I'm content. There's two of those guys. Then I'm really, really scared. So I'm waiting for the third shoe to drop. As you know,
the third shoe.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for the fifth shoe to drop.
No, that's not that funny. Two people I know pretty well have died in the past week.
Oh, you got the triple. Who are they?
The first guy actually happened the last day I was in San Francisco. I told you about one of the very first directors I ever worked with.
Right, right.
Yeah, Jeroen Kampoff. And I'm not quite sure how he passed away, and I'm afraid to post anything until I know, because he was a really heavy Galois smoker, although he probably got hit by a car. That would be very typical. So it's just weird, you know, guy you work with for, 25 years. And then the other one... and both of these, I found out a little bit after the fact. So this also happened a couple of days ago. Gary Christmas, who was one half of the infamous Christmas twins, who had a coffee shop. These were two Americans, American Indians. It's like African American / American Indians was kind of, I'm not quite sure. They were all over the map. And they had performed for many, many. What are you doing, man?
I'm sorry.
If you're not interested, you know, just don't make any noise, okay? I'm talking about dead people here. I'm gonna have Gary Christmas come down and put a curse on you.
But don't do that.
But they performed since the 40s with Tina Turner in the 40s, but they performed on stage since the 40s and later were on tour with Tina Turner. And, you know, they had a really good, cool act. And Gregory died, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago. They're twins. And so Gary passed away. And they had lived in Amsterdam for, I don't know, 20... longer than 20, maybe 30 years with a coffee shop that actually served coffee and tuna fish sandwiches, American style.
What do they call those things?
What?
A coffee shop that serves coffee. I've never seen one.
Well, it didn't have the word coffee shop on the front because that would bring in the wrong clientele in Amsterdam. It was called Backstage. And so anyway, and now I'm just waiting, you know, I'm like, and you're sitting around going like, you know, because we discussed this, like, yeah, they always come in threes and like two down.
Right.
Fuck, I hope I'm not number three.
Wait, why would you be number three?
I don't know. It's people I know. They know me. It's now getting into my circle, you know?
You haven't been hung out with these people for years. They're part of a different milieu. It'll be somebody else in that same clique.
All right, then. Hey, congratulations. I didn't have a chance to congratulate you on your top 25 Forbes most, most influential people on the web? Web celebs. Which,
yeah, great.
We discussed this at dinner. And pretty much a gay list. There's not a single woman on the list, which is highly suspect and prejudiced and just wrong to start with. And it looked like it was full of little jokes.
It might have been because they put Leo and myself at the end of the list.
Yeah, with Leo underneath you.
We're not gay, by the way, I can assure you.
No, I didn't mean it that way, but I think the guys who put it together are gay, and they were having a good time with it and picking cute guys to go on the list. And then as a joke at the end, they threw you and Leo in.
Yeah, and they made, and to make it even funnier, they put me ahead of Leo, who's really more of a web celeb than I am.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the whole thing was an inside joke. I mean, the number one web celeb, according to these characters, is Perez Hilton. And then it was just all over the place after that. It was actually quite funny. It was, you know, I guess Leo was on the list before. I didn't even know this list existed. Forbes has a lot of lists.
Yeah.
And I guess I should send these guys a...
Well, that's their franchise, right? Is it the Forbes lists, 500 or is it the Fortune 500? No.
The Forbes richest men, whatever.
Right. That's their franchise. That's all they got going for them. And it's just like a rag mag. And that shit is never right when it comes to fortunes.
No, it can't be. It's almost impossible. But I'll tell you the truth. I worked there. And they put a lot of work, serious amount of work and effort into that list, into that world's richest list. I mean, occasionally they'll screw up one of the lists, like the most influential. One time I remember they left off, I think they accidentally left off Oprah Winfrey when they did most influential women in show business. And she wasn't even on the list of our top 100.
Me.
And then the next year she was number two.
Yeah, and, Vita Guttmacher is what we call that.
And so they do make these huge blunders, but the richest list may have some errors and people left out because they've avoided contact. But the fact of the matter is these guys go through they have people working on that list all year round, and not just a few people.
What a sad result for the amount of work that goes into it then.
What, the richest list?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know people on the list, and they say, incorrect, those guys don't know how to count. They take as much public information as possible, and it's also, you know, is that, there's a perception amongst the public, like, is that how much, you know, so he's worth $2 billion, is it $2 billion, a pile of money sitting somewhere? No, of course not. You know, what is it really worth? What's it all invested in? You know, they take company values based upon public information. It's not correct. It's just not.
Are you mad because you're not on the list?
No, not at all. I don't believe.
Anyway, all I
list.
Know is they put as much effort into it as they can. I mean, yeah, I'm sure that, you know, how much can you really find out about some guy who lives in Dubai and is worth $5 billion? I mean, you know, just not going to, you're not going to get an accurate number. Guy could be worth nothing. I mean, look at Madoff.
The more I think about that, and when I was listening to that, what's the guy's name? It's like a Kolowski. Is that his name?
Oh, I guess the sheet of paper I threw out.
Good job. I think it's Kolowski. Kolakowski?
No, it's not. It starts with an M. Let me get
no,
that. I'm
start,
just trying
it,
to sort
it starts
out my
with
notes
a K.
Here.
It starts with a K.
It's Markopoulos.
That's what I mean. Karpomarkalos.
Whatever.
Okay.
Back to
I'm thinking the whole thing is rigged. The whole frickin' system. Everything. I mean, and everyone had to know about it. And everyone, and when you, and then I'm looking at these bonuses. Wall Street in 2007 handed out $150 billion worth of bonuses. I mean, come on. $150 billion? I mean, that's outrageous. That money's coming from somewhere. It's got to be a scam. I mean, when you look at that number alone, you got to think Ponzi scheme. There's just no other way.
Right. We're in the wrong business. Well, too late now.
No. We'll get into the carbon trading business, and we'll make a bundle on that.
Well, that could work. So what else is going on? Well, you know, we didn't talk about the Super Bowl and my correct prediction of who's going to win and why.
Well, I also predicted Pittsburgh. I do feel bad that I gave you a bum steer, and I told you to watch the commercials, and I think you were probably disappointed.
No, actually, I ended up watching the commercials. I ended up watching the whole game pretty much.
Yeah.
So I took some notes. I'll just make a few mentions. I thought it was interesting that they exploited the crew of Flight 1549 and put them on the show.
Yep.
And then Jennifer Hudson gave, I thought, the best rendition of the national anthem I've ever heard in my life, even though I thought she was going to fall on her ass because she was in these 5-inch spike heels and literally shaking up there.
I didn't see it, so I'm just jealous.
Oh, it was unbelievable. I thought she was hitting notes. I didn't realize, you know, that thing's a hard thing to sing because you have to hit this note in the middle of nowhere. She, like, not only hit the note, but she went beyond it. She actually made that. She has a hell of a range, this woman.
She went into flageolet on that?
But it was.
What's her name?
I'm telling you, my Jennifer Hudson. My a couple glasses on the shelf busted.
Wow. Hold on. Let me. Oh, it's been released on iTunes.
You'll get a kick out of it.
That's interesting.
And anyway,
they say she lip-synced, though. This is the story that I'm reading.
I don't think it looked like it. If she lip-synced, she did a heck of a job because she didn't look like it. Anyway, be that as it may. Here's what I thought about the ads.
Okay.
Could they have done more house ads? I counted 10 or 11 house ads for NBC before the first half, and then I stopped counting.
And did House come on right after the Super Bowl?
No, not House. House. I'm talking about House in terms of internal ads.
Oh, okay.
It was mostly for Heroes and one other show they kept promoting. And then, you know, NBC's lineup, you know, this kind of thing. And there was way too many of those. And then the only other thing that was being advertised were movies. And what else? That's about it. Oh, here's another exploitation. So they did so they're going to have the coin toss for the game.
Mm-hmm.
So they bring out John Elway, football player, Roger Craig, footballer, and then David Petraeus, the military.
What?
Military.
Did he have his uniform on?
And he's the one. Yes. And then he's the one who flipped the coin.
What is up with that? That's weird.
That's what I'm thinking. This is like a commercial event, you know, that's done, run by a football league and on a team. What are we bringing the military in for?
Oh, hold on. Oh, man. She's taking a deep breath. Let me just hear a little bit what you're talking about. You know, American television does this so well. You get the close-ups of the players.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's good. That's hard to say. It does look a little bit like she's lip-syncing.
Well, I don't think you could tell it on the YouTube video.
Yeah, I can. I'm a professional.
No, but this always looks like you're lip-syncing on YouTube.
Well, no. You can just tell by the lack of force emanating from her face.
Yeah, possible. If I was doing it, I'd want to lip sync it too.
Hell yeah! Because the thing is, you get that slapback from the audio comes back like almost a full second later. It's almost impossible to sing in a stadium. Okay.
And anyway, the other thing, they had a kind of a questionable ad for the Castrol Edge, which is a oil. Mm-hmm. I guess it's synthetic, where a man kisses a monkey.
That's hot.
It was kind of gross.
Really? Was that for viscosity breakdown?
And then, And then I got a note here. Al Michaels, I really dislike his announcing. Pepsi Max. Oh, they had a trailer for the Star Trek movie.
Mm-hmm.
That looked pretty interesting, but again, you know, it's J.J. Abrams, so I'm sure that it's mostly, you know, just suspense and things blowing up. That's about it.
Yeah, there was clearly no aha moment, what a great piece of video we just saw. They just don't do that anymore.
The Pepsi ads were pretty decent.
Yeah, I'll have to go take a look.
There was a creepy ad for something called G, which I think was Gatorade.
How was Bruce Springsteen? At halftime.
Oh, yeah, Bruce Springsteen, I didn't make a note on that. it's actually kind of funny. I thought he was great, except, you know, it was like singing Tramps Like Us, Baby, We Were Born to Run, and watching him sing that and thinking to yourself, you know, this guy's worth $250 million if he's worth a nickel.
Mm-hmm.
Why, you know, this song is just completely ridiculous.
For him to sing it now, you mean?
For him to sing it ever. You know, tramps like us, baby, we were born to run. Give me a break. And then at the end, he does have this joke at the end. He says, you know, at the end of the thing, he's got the camera and he's holding the. But well, here's the thing that I made a note of this. They introduce him at the beginning and he comes walking out with a guitar and then takes the guitar off and throws it to somebody and then comes out and sings. What was the point of that?
I didn't see it, man. I don't know.
I mean, why would you wear the guitar in the first place if you're not going
to
play it?
Well, maybe he decided to play a different song to start off with.
Yeah, right.
What was the first song? Born in the USA? Did he do one of the new songs?
It might have been. Whatever the case was, I thought this was bullshit. And so then he sings, you know, this other stuff. And he's got the whole, not only has Max Weinberg, who's the drummer of his E Street band, but he's got the entire Max Weinberg 7 from the Conan O'Brien show playing, which right. I must have been a thrill for them. Anyway, at the end, he holds up his, you know, he did put a guitar on later and play, and he holds it up and says, I'm going to Disneyland. So he's probably got an extra bonus for pulling stunt.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Hold on. Let me hear the glass breaking note, John. Go up. There it is.
Not everybody can do that.
No. Listen to this. Goosebumps. Fuck yeah! America! Fuck yeah! We're America! Bring out Petraeus! We're Americans!
It's probably the highlight of the event.
That was good.
It was
beautiful.
It was
and they got the jet fighters flying over. Nice.
Oh, yeah. You got to have that. Nice. You know, we've turned these events. I'm actually annoyed by this. When did it become the thing to do? I believe in the 30s or even after World War II, when you went to a baseball game, they didn't do the national anthem.
Really?
It's a baseball game. This is new.
You recall this, John? Because in my boyhood...
No, but I'm telling you, I remember when I was a kid, it was never as played up as much as... And I used to go to games in Chicago.
It's always like, ladies and gentlemen, please rise for our national anthem.
Right. What is this, a military event? I thought it was a baseball game.
Well, John,
do we have national anthems before a bowling tournament?
John...
I mean, where do you draw the line with this?
Well... You know that many people find it strange to know that American school kids in the morning, because really you think about in the morning.
In the morning.
You really only, hey, it's American school kids in the morning, everybody. Buzz killing crackpot here. Yeah.
America has changed. Obama's for the people. Obama.
That American school kids, not unlike you would think of the Chinese school kids, stand up and pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Yeah.
You know, that Patricia finds that creepy.
Well, that's something that was instituted.
I personally like it. I like it. I like pledging allegiance to our country and our Constitution. And if that's symbolized to the flag, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, well, we used to do that. Even when I was a kid, I don't know when that came into play. That probably was in the 50s or maybe during World War II. I'm not sure. I know it probably wasn't in existence back in the 1920s. But
it also helps remind people that we are a republic and to the republic for which it stands.
That does do that. And I don't know. When I was a kid, we used to do that all the time. Every, you know, pledge allegiance to the flag, blah, blah, blah. United States of America.
Can you not, blah, blah, blah? Can you not pledge the allegiance?
No, I can pledge allegiance to the United States of America and for the Republic for which it stands.
One nation
under God, and then
indivisible.
It goes on. Indivisible with liberty and justice for all.
Hell now!
So that was actually, it's not a bad pledge. You know, I know that the a lot of Jewish kids would not say the under God part. And of course, nobody cared.
Right.
And they'd mumble something. And which I don't understand why, but okay. And it wasn't like under Jesus. And they try to get, and then there's a bunch of atheists who try to get the under God part removed.
They always,
and
I've,
then they
I've
argue that it was
that
was only added, I guess, in the mid 50s. I don't even know what the history is. I'm sure Wikipedia has it. And I don't know. I thought, yeah, it's not a bad pledge. And, and you tried to say with liberty and justice for all, pounding that home is probably not a bad idea because we're not getting a lot of liberty or justice. And so maybe we'll get some revolt by the kids. I don't know if they still do that pledge every day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. And I, in fact, I read somewhere that one school actually had one of those Obama cutouts and that the kids were pledging the allegiance but looking at the Obama cutout. I mean, it sounds like it. Yeah.
There was a news story I read. This is another similar story where some teacher, because these teach a lot of these teachers, you know, they're in the teachers union. And one of them apparently, I was going to blog this and somehow I didn't. I don't know why. I should go back and revisit it. I'm sure it's going to crop up more, though. Apparently, some teacher put a picture, you know, they have I guess instead of having a flag, we always had a flag in our class, but instead of having the flag, they have a picture of the flag. And next to the picture of the flag, he put up a picture of Obama. And so you had, you know, kids standing up doing the Pledge of Allegiance to Obama and the flag. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, but, you know, Obama was there. And so the kid moaned about this to his parents, who are, you know, kids obviously some five-year-old or fifth grader who's a Republican, which is creepy if you think about it. And they bitched it to the school, and a big fuss was made, and they wouldn't take the picture down. And, you know, the teacher ended up winning, I think, the battle of the Obama picture. But I remember seeing, you know, in some classrooms, if I'm not mistaken, because you float around, you see this stuff, you see it. You know, there was pictures of Clinton or Reagan or pictures of George Bush. I mean, you know, so is a picture of Obama. I can't get that worked up about it.
Yeah, me neither. But it was one of those stories that people were going, oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, the right wing has not reacted with much grace.
Hey, were there any commercials about mercury in high fructose corn syrup on the Super Bowl?
No.
Okay. Because I'm seeing commercials now debunking. So these are mainstream commercials debunking this. I'm sure you saw the news that there's apparently trace of mercury in high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
And so these commercials are like, hey, this is with high fructose corn syrup. And the guy goes, oh, I don't want that because, you know.
Yeah.
And then
this commercial's been around here for a while.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't want that. And then she go, and this cute girl, of course, the girl's real pretty.
Of course, because you want to get laid, so we're going to have some high fructose corn syrup.
And so the girl says, really? You don't like it? Why?
And he goes, I don't know.
And then I think she throws some propaganda back, and I'm like, well, you know, it has fruit, you know, all it is fructose and sucrose, and it's the same as it, you know, blah, blah,
what
blah.
Is it? But what is it really, John?
It's a manufactured, one of the reasons I don't like it, it's a manufactured sugar that goes through literally an oil refinery process.
With guys with yellow hats on and stuff?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you have to have hard hats in the environment. Absolutely.
And oil slicks everywhere?
I guarantee there's hard hats where this stuff is made. And these guys, you know, again, people with clipboards looking at gauges. And so...
looking important. I need a few more millibars here.
So this goop falls out of a spigot, you know, after the process is over, and it's manufactured. It's not a natural product, and it's a mixture of different kinds of sugars. Mostly, it's got a lot of fructose, but you know the exact structures and the way.
What is fructose? What is that?
That's the kind of sugar that is found in most fruit. It's fruit sugar. And
so where does the mercury come from?
The mercury apparently comes from within the processing. There is, I guess, the poisoning step.
The poisoning step. Wait, you forgot to pull it through the lethal poisoning tube, Peter.
I think it's used as a in one of the processes in some. I looked it up, to be honest about it, after I read the story, because I thought this is bull. And there is some stage in the process where you need a catalyst.
Oh,
and I think it's part of a catalytic process that turns something into something else along the way. And somehow the mercury, which is involved, got leached into the process when it really shouldn't. And I guess it became a big scandal. That's the only thing I'm sure our sugar refiner, the guy who runs one of these refineries that makes this crap,
Well, though, nothing will happen. Are you kidding me? Nothing's going to happen. This is the story's already gone. No one gives a shit. Keep eating.
I don't know. There's a lot of underlying. You know, people are getting a little annoyed by
the government.
By well, the government's inability. You know, I think the SEC is a good example. You know, we get these agencies that are supposed to protect us. They don't do anything.
Well,
you
but got the not FDA only that, they're complicit, John. It's clear they're complicit. They're in the plot. They're getting paid. They get hookers. They get dope. They get all kinds of stuff. It's a great big fucking party in D.C. and in any other governmental organization because it's just gone out of control.
Well, the public is getting a little tired of it, and I think the FDA is the in their sites. They don't trust them, and they're not doing anything about food. We had this poisoning with this salmonella thing with peanut butter. I mean, the whole country's peanut butter supply, which is we're one of the few countries that eats the stuff, is contaminated, and it's apparently been contaminated for a year. And the owners of this plant got all kinds
of warnings, and they were told that they had unhealthy working conditions. I know it's outrageous.
And why isn't the CEO of that company in jail as we speak?
Because Martha Stewart makes better headlines.
So far, this peanut butter has killed 8 or more people. Yeah. 8 was the last count I heard, which was last week. I haven't seen what the body count is, you know, since then. And there's so, you know, this is wrongful death written all over it. I'm sure the lawsuits will wipe these guys out. But then again, they'll get nothing because these guys are going to go bankrupt. You can count on that. And the CEO is going to be living in Bermuda. I mean, this guy and probably half the executive staff, we need to follow the way China does it.
Yeah, hang them.
Hang them.
Well, we also have melamine in our milk, and it's the FDA actually said it's okay. You can have X parts per million melamine. It's okay in our milk. It's okay. Nothing to see here, people. Please keep walking.
Move along.
Nothing to see here. Just a little bit of melamine being added.
Here's the other thing that I think has got to annoy the public. You have, like, we have...
bicycles.
Well, that's another story. We have in Washington State, there's the Dungeness Valley Creamery, which is down, it's about 20-minute drive from our house in Port Angeles. And we get all our milk from there, and it's raw. And this guy, who's a clean freak, by the way, which is typical of these raw milk guys, which means, you have to really do a serious number. And the cows look so contented at this place. It's unbelievable.
They're happy, right? They're like, moo.
You can tell. I mean, seriously.
They're smiling. You can see cows smile. I know you can. Absolutely.
These cows are happy, and they produce a good product. And this guy is harangued and just basically intimidated from the get-go. He was the first raw milk provider in the state of Washington. He's worked on it for 10 years, pushing and pushing and pushing the legislation to change because all these guys who make this crappy product that needs to be pasteurized because it's contaminated.
And diluted and added melamine to it.
Because they are basically in the cahoots with them, I don't see how this raw milk place can stay in business. And meanwhile, the raw milk is a million times better for you if,
The
public has got to be sick of this. But a lot of them are still reading.
Stupid. No, we're not just that. We're looking at Amy Winehouse. It's more important. I went to Sainsbury to go get a couple of, to run some errands. And there was no milk because of the blizzard of 2009 that we had here. No milk. There was just no milk. There was no milk.
How do you drink your tea? That's impossible.
It's very challenging. But, no milk.
You can always switch to green tea during these periods and drink that. That doesn't need
milk. We'll be drinking rock and nettle tea pretty soon, dude, in this country. So broke.
I know that's one of the big stories there, but the other one I thought I kept running into it in the Daily Mail is the Jessica Simpson chubbing out seems to be a big story.
You have got to be kidding me. You actually follow that?
I'm not trying to. I'm not. Yeah,
it's hard to avoid, I know.
It's hard to avoid. They keep showing these pictures of her in these kind of funky pants she wore once. And the Daily Mail is calling her a size. I think she's a pretty small girl, but they're calling her a size 12.
Oh, please.
And I'm looking and going, I don't think that's possible.
No. It's so sad.
But anyway, I think the public is getting fed up.
Well, I hope so, because
the portion of the public, it doesn't take everybody to get fed up, because some people are just going to eat anything and they don't care about high fructose corn syrup or the fact that soybean oil makes a better fuel than it does a cooking oil, and that canola oil is, there's no such thing as a canola plant, and canola oil means Canadian oil with low acidity and is actually rapeseed oil. You know, this sort of thing, you know, I always get the biggest kick out of the number of people who use canola oil, and I always bring the same thing up. What does it mean? What is a canola? Have you ever seen one?
Yeah,
where does it come from?
It's a beautiful tree, the canola.
The beautiful canola tree. And he's like, anyway, they couldn't sell it as rapeseed oil because nobody would buy it.
Well, I agree with you. I think the public is getting fed up. I watch C-SPAN every morning. It's the early morning show when you can call in, and they have a independent line, a Democrat line, and a Republican line, which is kind of cool. So the people are kind of pre-identified as they call in. And unfortunately, everyone sounds 80 who calls in. Yeah. Which is kind of
who
the bummer.
Who else is this the C-SPAN except you?
But it's great. But it's really good. It's really entertaining, particularly the live Obama show, which seems to be just about every morning. But you know, now that everyone's getting upset, and even though it's trivial in the true theft that is taking place and has already occurred, you know, these bonuses, and people are getting really mad. And in the meantime, you know, we've got FEMA building camps to throw the troublemakers in. That's my opinion. And we have bills like H.R. 45, which are intended to take away our guns, which is kind of the cool thing about America, is that we, you know, at the end of the day, and I don't think it's actually ever been, has it ever been tried? We've never had a true coup attempt, have we?
There was a mild attempt on Roosevelt. Very interesting story. It was by the Democrats, I might add. They tried to get, I think the guy's name was General Butler. This is actually on the blog. I found a good reference to it. Everyone knew about this. My dad actually told me about this when I was a little kid, that he knew something about it. But all the documents have come out since. And the Democrats didn't like Roosevelt. He was not one of their normal Democrats. He was kind of a combination of a Republican and a socialist in some funny way, but he wasn't part of the system that they had, and they wanted to get rid of him, so they were going to do a coup, have General Butler, who was apparently very famous at the time, take over the government, and they were all going to go along with it. Oh, yes, claiming that the president was disabled, you know, because he had polio or something like that, and he couldn't function properly. And the general, and I think the American military tends to be this way, said no, basically. Said, you guys are crazy. And the whole scheme fell apart. I'll put in another link to that in the blog, because it's really an interesting story. And that's the closest I think we've come.
But that is a part of the point of the Second Amendment, is to be able to overthrow the government or remove the government, is it not?
Well, I think it's to protect the government. The idea is if you had a situation where the government was overthrown by the military or some of that, then you could arm and reinstall the rightful government.
Well, the government has been overthrown by the military industrial complex. It has happened. It's done.
Well,
it's in place.
It's not obvious.
Yeah. September 10th, 2001, Donald Rumsfeld says, and I quote, "Yeah, we can't find $2 trillion." Yeah, not obvious. That's right. They covered it up one day later.
Well, they did.
One day
later. The thing is that, you know, the people who were going on and on about how Bush was going to just take over and he was going to be the third, you know, he's going to take a third term and he was going to nuke Iran so they could stay in office and push off the elections. None of this happened. These people were all crazy. But I remember hearing the same crap, and it's always the Democrats who push these agendas, by the way. You know, you think all the Republicans have got all these conspiracy theories about this and that. Yeah, they have a few, but they don't keep thinking stuff like, you know, the president's going to declare martial law, and then next thing you know, it's going to be, you know, a third term for Bush. They said the exact same thing about Nixon. I remember this guy, one writer, Mark Rich, I think is his name. You know, he said, well, Nixon had it planned. He was going to be in for the third term. Then it was going to be, I swear to God, he said that it was going to be crowned emperor. And these people were actually believing this. Emperor Nixon.
That sounds kind of cool. I mean, these guys are kind of emperors. We might as well make them that. Just call them by their name, you know.
you know.
I got some cool album art for today's show, by the way.
Yeah? Emperor Obama?
No. It's you and I. It's a cartoon. You and I throwing the O, and it's a crackpot and the buzzkill. You'll like it.
Good.
Hey, you know what just came out? The BBC just released? The Hudson plane crash audio. The missing tape
that I've been looking for.
Yeah, you want to listen to it?
I'm sure it sounds all spliced up.
Well, let's listen. I haven't heard it. You want to do it? It's only like a minute.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, let's go. Hold on a second.
This is Cactus 1539. Hit birds. So you've lost thrust on both engines. Returning back towards LaGuardia.
Okay.
Okay, you need to return to LaGuardia. Turn left heading up 220.
220.
Tower, stop your departure. He's got emergency returning. It's 1529. Bird strike. He lost all engine. He lost the thrust in the engines. He's returning immediately.
See, 1529.
See, how come we don't hear that part? So we hear. I hate this. So we hear him say, "Bird strike. We're turning back." And then this guy calls another controller, and he says, "Oh, he's lost thrust in both engines." How come we don't hear that part? I hate that.
Yeah. Well, maybe he just. Maybe the air traffic controller was just dreaming it.
Well, let's listen. Maybe it was in the script. Let's listen to the rest of it.
He lost thrust in both engines, he said.
Got it.
Cactus 1529. We can get it for you. Do you want to try to land 1313?
We're unable. We may end up in the Hudson.
Cactus 1529. Runway 4 is available if you want to make left after runway 4.
Hudson, not an option.
Okay, I'm not sure we make any runway. What's over to our right? Anything in New Jersey? Maybe Teterboro?
Okay, yeah, off your right side is Teterboro Airport. Do you want to try to go to Teterboro?
Yes.
Teterboro, Empire. Actually, LaGuardia Departure Guy, emergency inbound.
Hey, guy.
Cactus 1529 over the George Washington Bridge wants to go to the airport right now.
Wants to go to our airport, check. Does he need assistance?
Yes, it was a bird strike. Can I get him in for runway 1?
Runway 1, that's good.
Cactus 1529, turn right 280. You can land runway 1 at Teterboro.
We can't do it.
Okay, which runway would you like at Teterboro?
We're going to be in the Hudson.
Wow. We're going to be in the Hudson. Wow, so that was 1 minute and 20 seconds, and the guy made, so of course it was edited. So it sounds like he made three separate phone calls to other controllers. I don't know, man. I just hate it. Why don't they just release the raw audio? I hate it when they do this. I want to hear all the details. I want to hear how he called it in, you know, bird strike. That's all I get?
We're going to be in the Hudson. It is kind of funny, though. I mean, you listen to it.
Guy's awesome. Yeah, I mean that's like a Bruce Willis vibe there.
Yeah. It's like, totally. It's like, well, you know, whatever. So,
but here's the piece of the audio that we're missing when he says, you want to go to Teterboro. You know, the piece of the audio, which I'm sure we'll find in the cockpit voice recorder, is, fuck no, I hate Teterboro. It's always got a crosswind. What a piece of shit airport. I don't want to go there. I'd rather go into the Hudson. That's the piece we're missing. They edited the good stuff out, I tell you. Damn it.
Yeah. I'd rather be in the Hudson. It's a good one.
It's like total John Wayne stuff, man. It's beautiful. You could make that stuff up, you know.
Yeah. We should probably do a takeoff on the whole thing. Okay, let's see what we got here for last Saturday. I had a couple of notes. See if we can make this make sense.
Yeah, we had a note to ourselves, John, that at least twice an episode, we would play an Obama jingle.
Obama! We are the people of America! United for our country!
Obama!
Just wanted to keep the quote up.
Yeah, that's good. And that's actually kind of a snap. It sounds radio-ish. It makes this show sound lively.
Oh, yeah, I have 5 of them, so I can intertwine them and make new remixes. We'll have enough to last us a year.
We should probably throw in some of that in the morning stuff, too. You might as well pull a clip from that.
Well, we should also do 100 days, day 17, Obama in the morning, FM radio.
Yeah, we should, to really annoy our listeners.
Nothing, get off on it. They're throwing the O on the Skype chat, by the way.
So who's the, we got to get that website up. Say no more.
Uh-huh.
So now I've got these notes. These are from last week or last Saturday. One says YouTube. Does that ring a bell?
No. I've heard of YouTube.
Cactus.
Oh, hold on, John. There's a longer piece. You won't be able to hear that. No, never mind.
Here's another note I made.
Yeah.
Finish cussing.
Yeah, well, it rings a bell, but you weren't supposed to bring it up on the show. You were supposed to have some Finnish cuss words.
Oh, Finnish. I guess it's Finnish.
No, it's two N's.
But
it's irrelevant now because they're quitting the show.
Oh, they always quit.
Yeah, no, they're quitting the show because they're like, well, if those guys are going to do two no agendas, we can't do two no yo agendas. That's going to cut too much into my family time.
Oh, yeah, so much work.
Yeah. Drag about something you just heard.
The other thing is they could just do the one Yo Agenda show about the Saturday show.
Yeah. I mean,
and it's just skip us.
Yeah.
We don't, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. We finally beaten them back. They obviously can't stand
hack
the heat.
It. Can't hack it.
Okay. Here's another one. IPO versus 55, and I've got 55 circled.
IPO versus 55.
And 55 is circled.
IPO versus 55. I don't know. I'm going to have to pass.
I know what it is.
I'm going to have to pass, Alec.
Alex
Trebek.
I've come to the conclusion that the only reason that the... I think I may have mentioned this on a Cranky Geeks yesterday or the day before. Yesterday. I've come to the conclusion, I haven't written this up, but that the only reason for the entire financial collapse is because they created all these crazy real estate investment deals that were all, you know, packaged and sold and bought and sold and bought, mainly because there was no IPO market to rip off and scam.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Very good point. Very good point. Ever since Sarbanes-Oxley.
You can blame on Sarbanes-Oxley.
Yeah. Which, how old is that now? 8 years? Seven?
I think it came in 2002, I believe.
So about 7 years, yeah. Fantastic, great job. Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
Yeah, because these guys are always making money on the, you know, on betting on these IPO deals, and they were always packaging them up. All the time was spent doing those things. There were no IPOs last year. One maybe.
I'll never forget when we took our company public. You get the infamous pricing meeting the evening before. So essentially, the underwriter, the bank, looks at their book, their order book, and yes, they have maybe 10 people who will each say they'll take 20%, but they know they really won't, you know. And they just look at all the shares, and they look at how much money needs to be raised, and of course, really how much money they're going to take in fees, warrants, and all kinds of other tricky stuff. And then they have a little something left behind the scenes called the green shoe. So if you need more shares to make up the amount of money the company needs to raise, you know, there's more. It's all kinds of tricks and all kinds of shit going on. And then you have that pricing meeting. And for a number of reasons, we had to be priced at, and this was very, very early. This was before dot-com mania. This was 96. And we actually were a company making money. And but we need to go out at like $7 a share. It was very small IPO. And so they said, it has to be $6. And, you know, there were a number of reasons with investors pre the IPO that it had to be a minimum of seven, and we just left. We walked the deal, and of course, you know, they wouldn't let it bust, but it was just amazing to see how, but like clockwork, you know, if you read a book about going public, this is exactly what happens, and it's one big scam. They're all horn pole dance beard drinking cheats.
Yeah. So they went to they couldn't do that anymore, so they had to find something else to do, and they screwed it up because they weren't used to it. They never saw there's anything like this. Here's another one that's on the list. Who started the 100 days idea?
Yes, yeah, that we were talking about that. We talked about it after we stopped recording. And,
right.
And you see the graphics everywhere. I know that it's now day 17 of the first 100 days. And who started it and why? Because it's illogical. A quarter, everything goes by quarters. So it would be 90 days.
Well, the first time I remember it, although somebody might give me an earlier reference, and maybe one of our listeners can, and maybe there was something to do with Roosevelt, because again, you know, everything is Roosevelt, so it might have been a Roosevelt thing. I mean, there may have been a 100-day deal with Roosevelt, but the first one I personally remember experiencing was the 100 days of the Macintosh, from Steve Jobs. He had his 100-day, when he rolled out the first Mac in 1984, it was going to be this 100 days, we've got to do this, and it's our goal. We have 100 days to do this and 100 days to do that, 100 days to sell so many machines. And after the 100 days, you know, they accomplished it, and that was that. But it, they made a big deal out of it.
Mm. Well, Jobs isn't original, so it's very likely that he was the first one to come up with it.
Maybe, but yeah. I doubt it.
Hmm.
I just doubt it. I just have a sense that I don't think so. But if nobody can come up with another one that actually, you know, it has to also be, if you find the 100-day thing, it has to have some influence. In other words, it would have to have been a Roosevelt or a Reagan or some president or some big thing or a Ford Motor Company. It couldn't be just, you know, Joe Schmuck down the street at the Chamber of Commerce came up with a 100-day plan. Yeah, you know, that's where it started.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it did start with FDR. Who knows?
Yeah, it just sounds like an FDR thing to me. And the fact that Obama's, you know, trying to be FDR.
Yeah,
then here's another one.
Looking forward.
Here's another one. I have a squiggly arrow pointing at a square box. And inside the square box are the numbers 101 and 102. And the number 101 is circled.
Wow. I don't know.
Now, this comes right after it says, who started 100 days? And I have an arrow that goes over and then dog legs down and says, Obama breakdown. And then I have, that's where these two numbers appear, 101 and 102. So it may have something to do with 100 days. Is there 101, 102? I don't know.
That was that's probably your own little thought thing there. You didn't share it with me.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. I mean, what's the point of making notes if this is what you end up with?
Very good question, John.
And here's another one. This one's at an angle, and it's circled. And it's the number 102.44.
102.44 FM, everybody. It's GCD in the morning. 102.44.
Yeah, so maybe somebody can help there. Maybe somebody had a temperature. Not sure.
Switching gears, former Vice President Dick Cheney warned that there is a high probability that terrorists will attempt a catastrophic nuclear or biological attack in the coming years, and he fears that Obama's administration policies will make it more likely the attempt will succeed.
That guy never gives up.
He's fantastic, isn't he?
He's unbelievable. So somebody said this on one of these show, one of these talk shows, and I can't remember who it was or where, but I'd credit him. But they said Dick Cheney comes in. He supposedly had, you know, some sort of, you know, fell down or hurt himself, so he had to be in a wheelchair for the Obama inauguration speech. And if you see the pictures there, you'll see him sitting next to Bush, and he's in this wheelchair.
Yeah, like Dr. Evil.
The guy's comment was, I think it was, you know who I think it was, is the guy.
I think it was Tom Brokaw.
No, it was D.L. Hughley. D.L. Hughley said this. He says, the reason for this is because he didn't want to ever have to stand during Obama's speech.
No way. He said that? That's funny.
As soon as he said it, I said, that could be it.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't want to stand. I mean, Obama's coming in there. Everyone has to stand up, right? The president comes in. He doesn't have to because he's in a wheelchair, so screw ya.
It could be true. I think I heard Tom Brokaw say he looks like Dr. Evil.
He did say that. Brokaw's gone kind of nutty. But so I've got this. Another thing I want to blog.
I've met him. He's a cool guy, Brokaw. I think he smokes dope and a lot of it.
He looks like he does.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of talks a little bit like he does.
Well, I was smoking marijuana today. Yeah, he looks like Dr. Evil.
He does that too a lot. I'd say I went to blog entry for the FDR. I said I was going to blog something else.
Vice President Cheney, let me ask you. I'm Tom Brokaw.
That's getting there. So there's this picture. I'm going to blog it today. I keep promising this, and I haven't done it yet.
Wow, the guy is amazing. Protecting the country's security is a tough, mean, dirty, nasty business, he said. These are evil.
Cheney?
Yeah, these are evil people, and we're not going to win this fight by turning the other cheek, Obama. Wow, that's outrageous.
Well, yeah, he should just shut up.
For real.
Anyway, there's this picture. I'm going to blog it. I'll try to do it this afternoon or tonight. It's a super high-resolution, multi-megapixel shot of the inauguration audience. with Obama in the middle.
I've seen that, and there's another one from... There was another one that I saw that was not the ones you sent me. It's from globaleye.com, I think.
Yeah.
And that's taken from the top. I mean, that's amazing. Look at... You can read the tag on women's bras.
It's unbelievable.
It's just outrageously beautiful.
So anyway, so this one that I sent you a copy of I was looking for Maggie, and you know who's in our office, and she was in that audience somewhere. I couldn't find her, but there's a lot of other people that are missing. I couldn't find John Doerr, for example, in any of the.
I love the expressions on everyone's faces. Did you zoom in and look at Biden and look at...
Biden was put over in the peanut gallery. What's he doing over there?
That's why he was looking so prunish.
I thought that Biden was given the bum's rush. I mean, you can tell by where they sat these people who was going to, you know, important. What was the situation. Yeah. And Biden looks like he's out.
Well, he is. He's on that listening tour for the next 6 months. So they shipped him off.
He's definitely out of the picture.
Yeah, I think Biden actually has some heart for the country, and he's making trouble, and he wants to really do something. And so they've tuned his chip or whatever and said, okay, you now will help middle class go on listening tour, report back. Because I think the guy might actually... have some real spirit in him.
I'm more of the opinion that they're going to screw him. They're going to put him in the penalty box for a while for something he may have said during the campaign.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. This whole Blagojevich business, this guy must have pissed off someone somehow. Because I was thinking back to, you know, how did all this come out? And all of a sudden there were audio tape. I mean, we can't get the audio tape of the hero Sullenberg flying into the Hudson, landing in the Hudson, ditching for 4 weeks, yet no problem. Within minutes, we've got the Blagojevich phone tapes of him, you know, basically selling the Senate seat, which I'm sure is business as usual across the entire government. He must have pissed someone off real bad.
Yep. I wouldn't be surprised, especially in Chicago.
I need to understand more. Chicago politics, there's a lot going on there, and historically... Yeah, you know, we should know because our president is from there, and he comes from that pool.
Yeah.
Is it Daley? Is Daley the Don?
Yeah, Daley. He took over from his father, who was the original guy, and then they had a bunch of boneheads in the middle, and then Richard Jr. took over, and he's running the show. And you know, he runs it. You know, Chicago's always been run with a kind of a mob-like style. With a big boss.
Which I kind of like. I don't mind it. I think that's kind of cool.
It works. You know, Chicago is not the worst place in the world. Although I think it's becoming kind of, it's starting to fall apart. I'm not going to blame any ethnic group, but...
But while I'm at it.
Well, maybe I shouldn't even go there.
You lived in Chicago, right?
Only when I was a little kid. Mm. And but I still go back there because there's a lot of meetings and things that happen in Chicago, and I'm always driving around. And I'm a Californian, so I rent cars. And so I'm always driving around. And I think Chicago is becoming, I think it's going to have the second biggest Latino population outside of Mexico City shortly.
Mm.
I'll tell you, you can get as good a taco or... Seriously, it's not, you know.
It's no longer known for its deep dish pizza. It's now home of the taco.
I'm telling you, they got good tacos there. I mean, we have good tacos in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there's lots of great ones down in San Diego. And, of course, if you go to Mexico, you might find them there, too. But Chicago's just got just unbelievable. But it seems to be... seems to be a huge influx. Now that may be reversing because now that it seems that they're cracking down on
wasn't there a lot of construction going on in Chicago for the past 20-30 years?
I don't know. I don't notice it.
Hmm. I do have a question, John. Your notes are so interesting to me, and I do love playing the "What the frig did John write down a week ago" game. But how in the devil do you manage to write a book? I mean, you don't take notes properly. How can you ever reconstruct it to create? I mean, don't you have to take notes when you're doing your investigative work for?
I do. No.
Or is this book more phantom than I think it is?
No, the book is actually done. No, the way you do it is you write. Taking notes and then using them later has never been an effective method for me to do anything, unless I have the one big idea. Like I'll have the best kind of notes that I make are thematic.
Do you just write in Word, or do you use an outliner of any type? Or
I don't use an outliner. I write straight up.
Do you use a Remington typewriter?
I use an Olympus.
An Olympus.
I blew the joke. I can't remember the name of the typewriter company. I think it's Olympus or Olympic. I'm not sure. Anyway. No, you just write. You just go for it, and then you go back and what you do is you kind of do it in a reverse manner. You have information that you don't know the specifics of, and you just leave that blank, or actually put a code in so you can always search for these spots. And then you write everything you can, and then you go back and you fill in these blanks, that confirm whatever it was you were writing. But generally speaking, when I take a note for anything I'm writing about, and I only write short essays generally, but a book can be a series of them. I'll write, like, the column I'm working on now for PC Mag is the New York Times, and it's thinking about making the online edition a subscription where you have to pay. And so I'm writing a column about what a stupid idea that is. So that doesn't take a lot of notes.
If you've got a multi-billion-dollar business idea, no worries. Here comes Buzzkill. Buzzkill will ruin your plans. Fantastic.
So I don't need a lot of notes. So, I mean, it's like doing this show. I mean, you know, this conversation. I have a lot of information that I've accumulated.
It's just not decipherable.
Well, when you write it down on a piece of paper as 102.44, well, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe that's a bill. Somebody called me and said, hey, you owe us $102.44. But I usually put a dollar sign in front of it, but I didn't.
Well, I was thinking it could be a stock price maybe, or...
But it wouldn't be 40, you know, maybe. No, I don't think so. I don't know. I have no idea. I also have another one note on here says Ravens talking. I kind of know what that's about. And then Kirby Hensley, which I'll save for another show, since you mentioned you were in the Universal Life Church.
I'm not just a member. I'm a grand poobah.
Grand poobah. You know, you at one point, Hensley would give you a, you know, we visited him, which I'll tell the story in more detail in some other show.
He's the founder of the Universal Life Church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, so you want a PhD? He said, what do you want a PhD
in? The whole Senate's full of them.
Anything. And I said, oh, maybe. I ended up getting a Doctor of Divinity. So
you're crazy.
Oh, so I could put John C. DeVore DD.
I just got an email from Bobby Eden. That's Patricia's porn star friend.
Oh.
God, B-O-B-B-I, if you want to Google her. Hey, and the last thing I had in my notes, which I kind of bitched about, yes, I did a source code yesterday. People have pointed out to me that my money honey, Erin Burnett, that she's one of them. She worked at Goldman Sachs. She was at Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, she's total program job, and I'm heartbroken.
Erin Burnett was on the Council of Foreign Relations. That must have been boring.
It's the organization. All those inside fuckers belong to it. Everybody.
So Rush Limbaugh, you know, he's got an affection for her.
Oh, really?
He's talking about her.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Well, he can have her now. He can have her. I'm done with her already. She's reptilian. It's hard to find out. This is one of the casualties of war.
I find it hard to believe that she was. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, what I don't get.
Well, when you see
Goldman Sachs, what was she doing there?
Well, she was an analyst, I think. When you hear her speak on, she was on Meet the Press, and it really was. There's a YouTube video about it. It really was pretty clear that she's trying to tell the stupid people that, you know, these bonuses weren't really from TARP money. That money goes into a special pool. Yeah, it was pretty pathetic. It really was.
I like that. That's like the we're losing money. We've lost $10 billion, and we're going to take this TARP money put it in a special pool. But I'm going to give myself $1 billion from the $10 billion we lost, so we're going to have lost $11 billion.
Well, she did it even better. Steve Forbes was at the table. Speaking of, And she said, well, you know, so like, say we're a bank and I'm over here and my department lost $1 billion, but Steve over there, his department gained $1 billion. Now we still lost $1 billion, but shouldn't Steve be compensated with a bonus for the great job he did? And I'm like, oh my God.
Did she say that? Really?
Yeah, she said that exactly like that. I went flaccid. I was just, oh man.
Wow.
Yeah, it was painful. And then I look at her bio and like, she's total reptile insider. No wonder these morons, the ones who aren't in the game on Wall Street, these morons are looking at her, you know, going, hey, yeah, I'll invest in that, Aaron. Yeah, I'm going to go for gold. I'm going to go for oil, whatever. It's got to be some kind of hypnotic thing they've got going on with her, because it's sort of working on me. There is a strategy behind her, no doubt. And I'm very upset.
Apparently.
Maybe I could still cure her.
Yeah, right.
I could make her better.
Huh. I worked with her a couple of times, more than a couple, actually. She does that show that I was doing a lot on CNBC.
Which show is that?
Yeah, she's
lunch thing?
Street signs.
Street signs. Yeah. That's the one that Kramer comes on all the time.
Oh, he comes on. You know, the guy comes on. He doesn't do so much, but he'd come on and he'd kill half the show and we'd get bumped.
Oh, really?
Because they couldn't get him off the air.
So you worked in the studio with her?
No, I've been to the studio, but I generally work out of San Francisco and they just beam it in on a satellite. Or an ISDN line, I guess.
And how was she off the air? Was she nice? Was she sweet? Was she...
I never saw her in person. Pretty. That's the weird thing about it. I met almost all the other women.
But when you're not on the air yet, does she say, hi,
she's
John?
Great. She's fantastic.
Well, it's hurting me.
I'm just saying. No, she's got all the girls there, or women, sorry, because one of them is probably uptight.
And, the blonde one.
There's a bunch of blonde ones, so you don't know which one.
The one who does power lunch.
She's the one that looks like Goldie Hawn?
A little bit, yeah, that's her. I talked to her.
I told her she looked like Goldie Hawn, and she thought that was...
Was that a score?
She thought it was a good compliment.
Yeah, but have you seen Goldie Hawn?
She didn't
know
who the hell Goldie Hawn was. Right. It was one of the two, and I couldn't quite figure out which.
Goldie Hawn looks pretty road weary these days.
She's 90.
She's not 90, John. You're older than Goldie Hawn.
I told the woman she looks like a young Goldie Hawn.
Right. But Goldie Hawn just refuses to participate in the Hollywood game of regular maintenance.
You mean pulling her face up with operations?
Yes. That is the game.
She doesn't have to. She's an executive producer now. She does mostly...
People don't realize how much she has done in the field of production and how incredibly successful she's been. All they can ever think of, oh, Private Benjamin. Well, she's done a little bit more than that. It always bothers me. You see these gossip shows. Oh, Goldie Hawn. Ha, ha, ha. They'll laugh at her. Oh, she's got cellulite.
Yeah, she's pretty much not playing that game. She's going to age gracefully. Although with people making comments like she's road weary, I don't know, maybe she's going to be pressured to do something.
I just received an email with the Troubled Asset Relief Program status of efforts to address transparency and accountability issues. Is that the PDF you were talking about?
No.
I was
talking about the Madoff list.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry. No, you're right. It was something else. This is also interesting. I'll have to forward this to you.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this is the total dispersed $293.7 billion. Capital purchase program, $194 billion. Fantastic. Automotive industry financing program. How much do you think we've spent so far on the automotive industry?
$2 billion.
19.5.
Wow.
Interesting, huh? Oh, cool. It's got a timeline. Oh, this is from the GAO.
Oh, you got to send me that. This sounds good.
Yeah, let me just thank the person who sent this to me. Eric Blazinski says, I asked my congressman, where is the transparency? And they sent me a document on TARP. Allocation of $293 billion. List every bank how much they received. Here's the link. Where did the rest go? And where the hell did it come from? Is the Fed buying U.S. treasuries to fund this? ? John,
I have no idea. I think it's a You know, House of Cards.
You know, it hit me, and this will be the final word out of me for this show. This is basically economic hitman in reverse. Because now we have, you know, this whole Buy American, which Obama has had to basically retract because, of course, it's the Chinese who want to come in with their steel. And it's almost like what we've done to Africa for the past 50, 40 years or longer than that, where, okay, we're going to lend you all this money. And now when you can't possibly pay it back, we're going to start making demands like you're going to take our shit. We're going to sell you our shit so we can get our money back in with profit. Isn't this just a complete reverse economic hitman?
Economic hitman turned in on itself.
You agree?
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I had to watch it play out. I don't know what the scheme is.
Well, the IMF is in on the game. It's just look, everyone went where the money is. Everyone's in East Asia. That's where all the big money guys are off to. And you know, the Chinese, as one example, have been lending us, you know, trillions of dollars. And
so what you're implying is that essentially the whole our government apparatus and everything that works for that has been working for Americans to improve our lot in life have basically sold us out.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I believe there's a lot of really good people in government. I think there's a lot of really good civil servants, but they are probably too afraid, don't want to make waves. They've got a job. some of them do. Some stand up, and they're still a little misguided in what they say and what they latch on to. They don't really see the big picture. But, yeah, in general, I think the whole system is completely corrupt from inside out. And just look at Wall Street. Just look at the bailout. Just look at the SEC, the whole Madoff thing, who, by the way, was one of the creators of NASDAQ. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that this thing, and you know, hello, awake all of a sudden. Do we see what's going on? If there's smoke, there's fire. If it smells like shit, looks like shit, and tastes like shit, it's probably shit.
A moment in our history.
At this defining moment, change has come to America. A government of the people, by the people, and for the people has not perished from the earth. This is your victory. We are and always will be the United States of America.
A moment in our history.
Obama.
Lovely.
Well, I think that you're just putting everybody on a bummer.
I'm sorry to do that, but that's what you can expect from Crackpot, which I am.
And Buzzkill.
I think it works better if it's...
I'm not the one making... You're more of a Buzzkill than me. I just want to throw that out
there. Well, what if it's not specified, dude? No one said
I think it's Crackpot and Buzzkill and Dvorak.
I think it should be Crackpot and the Buzzkill. There should be a "the" in there. It shouldn't just be...
Okay, I like the.
So
yeah,
you feel better now? You feel better that you've got a little "the" thing like King Buzzkill?
Like the Buzzkill.
The Buzzkill. Crackpot and the Buzzkill, everybody, in the morning.
All right, well, we'll talk again on the weekend and see if we can sustain this level of information since, you know, we did another hour and a half. I'd like to get it down to an hour.
Oh, I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah, it's hard to stop. Of course, I have to go do Tech 5 Top 5, which I'm going to have to do either tomorrow or this afternoon now because I'm going to miss my...
Always bitching and moaning.
Yep.
Okay.
That's what a buzzkill does.
So Saturday or Sunday? Well, we'll see what happens.
Saturday,
I agree. Okay. Coming to you from the place in space they know as Gitmo Nation East in southwest London in the Curry Terrace, I'm Adam Curry.
And I'm John C. Dvorak here in northern Silicon Valley, the Gitmo Nation.
We'll talk to you again very soon on No Agenda.